20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Championship Game Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Championship Game Sunday. Two good games. Unfortunately, the Packers are not playing. I wish they were. I wish we were discussing that today, but we're not. I will go over those championship games at the end of today's show. Just give some quick predictions at the end, but we've got a ton to get to. It's our end of year grades episode, something that I spend a billion hours on through the course of the year, grading every player on every play. Today, we're going to be going over the best, the worst, the most improved, the biggest decline, rookies, offensive MVPs, defensive MVPs, you name it. We're going to cover it all in totality, and we'll explain what those grades mean as well in just a moment. We did have some news from Saturday first, though, that I want to go over, the biggest of which, I think at least, is that Jim Leonard and the Green Bay Packers do have mutual interest per Ian Rappaport. Now, as you know, probably by now, the Green Bay Packers could not have interviewed Jim Leonard prior to the AFC Championship game today. They will have the opportunity one way or the other to interview him this week. Whether he makes it to the Super Bowl or not, they can interview him. The difference is, if the Broncos lose this game, they could interview and hire him. If the Broncos win this game, they can interview. They could even have a handshake agreement in place, but they can't officially hire until after the Super Bowl. So if you're hoping that Jim Leonard is going to become defensive coordinator of your Green Bay Packers, you might be having some extra incentive to cheer for the Patriots today instead of the Broncos. But there is mutual interest, meaning, again, Jim Leonard is interested in the Packers and that the Packers are interested in Jim Leonard. So that is huge and noteworthy per Ian Rappaport. Leonard is one of my favorites, and so far the favorites of the ones that they've actually brought in, at least that we know that they've brought in for an interview. I understand that there is this idea that it's just a passion in Wisconsin because he was a coach in Wisconsin. To me, it has nothing to do with that. I don't know of any other Wisconsin coaches that I would want coaching anything in Green Bay right now. I could, maybe if I thought hard enough, there'd be somebody, but it's a Jim Leonard thing more than anything. I did like the defenses that he coordinated at Wisconsin. I like that he has that coordinator experience. I know it was for a short period of time as an interim head coach, but I like that he has some head coaching experience as well. I loved how his playing career went and that he played under some very different defensive coordinators. I love the fact that he's had the opportunity to mentor under guys like Mike Pettine, knows the sort of style and system of a Rex Ryan, knows now Vance Joseph, is doing phenomenal stuff in Denver by all accounts as the passing game coordinator, assistant coach, defensive backs coach, etc. I love his experience, and I think he'd be a great fit in Green Bay. So thrilled to hear that he is, that there's mutual interest there. And to me, he's still one of the leaders in the clubhouse for that defensive coordinator position. I will be thrilled if it is him. If it's not, I still think there's some other coordinators out there that could potentially be a fit, including Jim Schwartz. But for now, to me, Jim Leonard, definitely one of those that is the leader in the clubhouse. If in fact Green Bay can get him in for an interview and hopefully get him hired, or at least get the interview to see if he would be a fit for both sides. And hopefully this time it works out, unlike when he ultimately turned it down to go back to Wisconsin, when I think they were going to probably hire him instead of Joe Barry. I've heard a lot of people ask, why have there not been other coaching changes in Green Bay up until this point? What is Matt LaFleur doing? What are the Packers doing? Why is Rich Bisaccia and Adam Stenovich and Luke Butkus still on the team right now? Don't kill the messenger. I'm going to say that one more time. I've talked about this before. I don't think Steno's going anywhere unless he gets a job somewhere else. More on that momentarily. I think he's going to stay as offensive coordinator. And by the way, if he doesn't, you're probably talking Nathaniel Hackett or Luke Getsy as offensive coordinator. They probably stay in house for that anyway, so I'm not sure how much that matters. Maybe they would go Sean Mannion. I kind of just want to see Sean Mannion remain as quarterback's coach because he's doing such a great job with that, if I'm being honest. So I don't know that there's a huge appetite there to change it. Maybe there is. We'll see. But right now, Adam Stenovich remains as offensive coordinator. I do think something will happen with Luke Butkus, but again, nothing has happened yet. We'll have to wait and see. And I'm not on the fence personally. I would move on from Rich Bisaccia, but I don't know what Green Bay is going to do. And like I've said all along, I think it's a coin flip whether or not he's going to be back. I don't think he's going to get fired. If anything, a retirement or maybe a mutual parting of ways. But I kind of think as of right now, there's just a strong chance that Rich Bisacci is back. And I'll say it one more time. I'm not necessarily agreeing with those decisions, but we're going to have to wait and see. But my larger point here is that I do think with Matt, there may have been there was a period of time where he had to get his stuff in order first, right? Like Goody and Russ Ball and Matt LaFleur all had to get their contracts done and sort of figure it out. And more specifically for Matt, before he could go and figure out his coaches, he had to figure out if he was even going to be back in Green Bay. And then as soon as that happens, Jeff Hafley leaves for Miami. And, you know, there was this talk of Adam Stenovich potentially going to Miami. And so I think he may have taken a slight, hey, let's wait and see approach of, I don't need to necessarily fire some of these guys or move on for some of these guys if they end up taking a job with Miami, and then everyone maybe just saves face overall, right? They move to Miami. I don't have to fire them. I can fill those spots anyway. If Steno goes, if Sean Duggan goes as the defensive coordinator from Green Bay's linebackers coach, there could be some moves that just inherently take care of themselves. Also, you don't want to, you know, spread yourself thin of all of a sudden a couple of these guys leave for, you know, Jeff Hafley's staff, and then you fire guys and all of a sudden you've got a very barren, you know, offensive or defensive room. That shouldn't play a factor. It should come down to its own volition, whether or not you want to keep somebody or not. But there's a lot going on in the coaching sphere right now of coaches potentially leaving or going somewhere else, especially when you have Jeff Hafley taking a job in Miami. So I think a lot of the stuff was just kind of seeing how things were going to progress this week and having things sort out. And I would expect we're going to get some news from Matt LaFleur next week. What that news is, whether it is Luke Butkus or Adam Stenovich or you know anything in between, we're going to have to wait and see. Rich Bisacci, et cetera. I don't know. But I do think we haven't reached like a crisis point yet. If we get to middle of next week, end of next week, and Bisacci and Luke Butkus are still employed, I would just say, yeah, they're probably just staying employed. I don't know. I would think that there's a really strong chance that Butkus at minimum goes in a different direction. And we'll see if anyone else goes anywhere, if Duggan does get the defensive coordinator job. But as of now, no changes. Again, I don't think that means anything quite yet. Give it a few more days. But if we get to Thursday, Friday this week and still no changes, the writing might be on the wall that there is actually not going to be many changes and that they're running this thing back in its entirety. Now, as far as Adam Stenovich goes, there were a lot of rumors along with Jason Vrabel that those two could, either one of them could end up as the offensive coordinator in Miami, under Jeff Hafley. That did not happen. They ended up going, Jeff Hafley ended up going, in this case with Bobby Slowick as offensive coordinator, and Vrabel and Steno for now stay in Green Bay. It does sound like Steno is still in the running for the Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator job. And from all accounts, it seems like Matt is willing to let Steno go to get an offensive coordinator role that includes play calling and not, you know, preclude him from doing that or not stop him from doing that by blocking any of those interviews. So if Steno is going to be gone right now, it seems like it might be Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator or bust. And if not, I would probably expect him back. But as far as any other coaching changes, again, kind of have to kind of wait through this next week or so, I would say, to see if Matt does anything. And also, too, another thing for the defensive coaching staff, with a new defensive coordinator, you may not want to make any moves there until you have your new defensive coordinator in place to see who he wants to keep or who he wants to move on from, what, you know, coaches he wants to bring in. There's a lot of moving parts here. So I would just say, take a breath on the overall changes. Let's give it a hot second to see what they ultimately do. And we'll have plenty of time to, you know, moan and complain and whine if they don't do anything. And we can cross that bridge when we get to it. But for now, let's give it a hot second, see what happens. And we'll see too if Steno does get that job in Tennessee, which could affect a variety of other coaching jobs. And maybe people want to go with Steno, you know, under him to be offensive coordinator. There's a lot of things at play. We'll see how that plays out. Meanwhile, another former Packers coach, Mike McCarthy, gets the Steelers job in Pittsburgh. This is awesome. Now, if I were a Steelers fan, I don't know how thrilled I would be going from Mike Tomlin to Mike McCarthy. As a Packers fan and a, you know, former Mike McCarthy fan and really current Mike McCarthy fan, I'm so excited for him. And he's got, you know, Pittsburgh in his DNA. I love the fit. And I love this from an NFL standpoint. And I do think Mike is going to give everything he has to the city of Pittsburgh to make that a winning team. As far as, does Aaron Rodgers go back? Do we get a year of Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers together? That would be really cool. I'd be all for that. And just to see how that plays out. I don't know where things go from here, but I'm thrilled for Mike that he gets the opportunity getting to coach three of the most iconic franchises in NFL history in Dallas, Green Bay, and Pittsburgh. It's a really cool story for him, and we'll see what he can do in Pittsburgh. I don't know, you know, where Mike's at in his coaching career, if he can still be a top-tier NFL head coach. We'll see. But I'm definitely going to be rooting him on. I'm excited for him. And really, again, just having that Pittsburgh DNA and being able to go home and coach your hometown team, that's a pretty cool story. So let's see what he can do with it. And again, as a Packers fan and Mike McCarthy fan, I'm all for this. And hopefully he goes out and crushes it, just again, not against Green Bay moving forward. All right, those are the key news and notes. By the way, you could end up with some coaches too, like a Luke Getsy has worked with Mike McCarthy in the past. So you could have some coaches go to Pittsburgh as well. Another thing to kind of keep an eye on. That brings us to our main event, our main topic for the day, which is the grades. Now, as I say every single time I talk about grades, these are not perfect. They're not meant to be perfect. They're not to be taken as a, you know, as canon, as Bible, as any of that, right? I am imperfect. My grading scale is imperfect. There's certain things I cannot glean from watching the tape. There are certain things that I can. But when you watch every player and every play throughout the course of the season, you gain certain observations. And when you're charting everything on every play, you can get a feel for who's trending up, who's trending down, who's playing well, who's playing poorly. And that's what I do. That's what I do through the course of the year. So if you want the actual number grades and you want all of this information, there's a few other categories that we're not going to go over today that are in the article. Go to PackerReport.com. It's the number one trending article over there. It is not behind a paywall. It is free and open to everybody, and it covers everything, and you get every player's grade for the entire season. So it's all out there. It's all for your knowledge and pleasure and whatever else. But just know, again, these are not meant to be perfect. This is my ninth year doing it. I've learned a lot through the process, and it's a fun exercise to do. If you disagree on some things, that's cool. That's fine. That's what we do this for. It's fun. There are certain things that when PFF grades things that I disagree with them, that I'm sure they disagree with me. And there's some things that we agree on too. And we'll, I'm sure, talk about a couple of those things as we go on today. But it's not just about the numbers. It's not just about the grade. It's about the overall observations. And I hope what you take away from this is somebody who spent a stupid amount of time grading every player and every play, putting together his thoughts for the season, regardless of whether you are a football savant or new to the game. If you watch that much of every player and every play, you're going to get some takeaways. And these are my takeaways from doing that exercise throughout the entirety of this year for the ninth consecutive year in a row. We'll be right back. Hey friends, the big game is almost here, and there's no better way to cash in during America's biggest sporting event than Prize Picks, where it always feels good to be right. And since the big game is right around the corner, it also means that it's your last chance to get into the football action before next season. So close the season out with Prize Picks by getting $50 instantly in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, we've been talking about Prize Picks all season long, and what I've really enjoyed are the stories from fans who've played Daily Fantasy for the first time, who've won a big pick, and who've told me how much they enjoy playing Prize Picks. Now, I've heard some awesome winning stories all season long, and you still have time to get in this football season to get some big wins with Prize Picks. Now, with Prize Picks, you don't need to wait until next year's fantasy draft to keep playing fantasy. Prize Picks lets you play fantasy football every week, even in the playoffs. Pick your favorite players and win when they hit their projections every week, no draft required. So join millions of users and sign up for America's number one sports app, Prize Picks. And right now, you can download the Prize Picks app and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups when you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Hey friends, sometimes life can feel like a big puzzle. You're constantly trying to fit all the pieces together, your career, your passions, your relationships, your finances, and of course, your healthcare. It's a lot. But finding care shouldn't be the trickiest piece to fit into everything that's going on in your life. That's why ZocDoc makes it easy to find and book an appointment with a doctor that you'll love. ZocDoc is a free app and website that helps you find and book high-quality in-network doctors so you can find someone that you love. Whether you're looking for dermatology, dentistry, primary care, eye care, or one of the 200-plus specialties offered on ZocDoc, you can easily search by specialty or symptom to build the care team that's right for you. The next time I'm in need of healthcare, you can bet the first place that I'll be going to is ZocDoc. It's incredibly easy to use and makes finding a reliable doctor a breeze. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/Packaday to find and instantly book a doctor that you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/packaday. ZocDoc.com/packaday. Thanks to ZocDoc for sponsoring this message. All right, MVP. MVP overall was Jordan Love. Could you make an argument for a Micah Parsons? Sure. By the way, he's our defensive player of the year. No surprise there. But Jordan was my highest graded player. I think he was easily deserving of the MVP. If there was a mistake early in the year by Matt, and I'm sure there were a couple, but if there was a mistake, I think it was not getting Jordan more opportunity to just win by himself. Like, I thought it was too run centric at times. It was too Josh Jacobs centric. I thought they needed to feed Jordan more. And that was a big talking point for Packers fans, Packers media, et cetera, at the beginning of the year. And as the year went on, it felt like they put it in his hands more. Of course, he had the injury at the end. Thought he was fantastic in the Bears game and the wild card game, and really did everything he could despite an offensive line that was shaky, wide receivers and tight ends that were in and out of the lineup. He just consistently performed. The turnovers were low. The big plays were high. And by almost every single metric imaginable, he was a top five quarterback in the NFL. So no question about it for me, MVP Jordan Love. My offensive player of the year, non-quarterback or non-Jordan Love, this is going to be, I think, a little bit more debated. Let me start by saying, I think if Christian Watson or Tucker Kraft would have been healthy, or maybe even Jaden Reed would have been healthy for the entire year, I think they would have been in the running. I think if Zach Tom would have been healthy for the entire year, he would have been in the running. But your top players, I mean, Jaden Reed was out more than half the year. Christian Watson was out about half the year. Tucker Kraft was out about half the year. Zach Tom was out a ton of time. And even when he was in, was not clearly himself. I think if any of those played a full year, they would have been very much in this conversation. Instead, my second highest graded player on offense and PFF's second highest graded player on offense was Josh Jacobs. So he is my non-Jordan Love offensive player of the year. I understand that Jacobs didn't have the year he had a season ago. This is why the grades are interesting. This is why it's, to me, why we do these exercises, because it is really easy to say, well, Josh Jacobs wasn't as good, or it's time to get rid of Josh Jacobs, or he's a step slower, he's not himself, and so on and so forth. And everything that I graded, and seemingly everything that PFF graded, would tell you this was not a Josh Jacobs issue. This was an overall run game issue, and this was an offensive line issue. And Josh Jacobs did what he could with extremely minimal opportunity in front of him from a blocking standpoint. And everything that he was pretty much asked to do, you know, when he did get any sort of blocking, even when he didn't, he a lot of times made something out of nothing. So to me, and again, had other people been healthy, maybe he wouldn't have been quite this high. But to me, he still had a very good season. For PFF, he had a very good season. And ultimately, he ends up second highest graded player on offense. And therefore, my offensive player of the year that is not named Jordan Love. Defensive player of the year is Micah Parsons. We're going to get to some stats later in this that are going to show you exactly why. I talked about it the other day with Grant and Perry of how Micah, the defense with Micah was like a plus 20 something in grade. And the defense without Micah those final 4 weeks was like a minus 18. It was just this massive, massive swing. It was like a really good NFL defense with Micah and an atrocious defense without Micah. He was unbelievable. He was everything as advertised and then some. That game against Detroit to start the season where he came out of the tunnel for the first time, had the sack, they had the big win. I mean, his energy was, you know, infectious on the team. I loved everything about it. I wish he didn't get hurt. The injury was just beyond brutal and unfair and unjust and everything else. But when he was in, he was even better than you possibly could have expected and quite easily the defensive player of the year for Green Bay. Rookie of the year is tough. It was not a great season overall for the rookies. This would almost inherently have to come down to either Matthew Golden or Anthony Belton. I don't think you really could give it to anybody else. Belton struggled, and Matthew Golden, when given opportunities, did not. In fact, Matthew Golden had a very solid grade for me, especially when you consider he didn't get a ton of snaps in the offense. To me, it was more of a victim of opportunity for Matthew Golden. We can talk about whether or not that was a Matt LaFleur thing or whether that was a Matthew Golden maybe not being fully ready to run a full route tree and all the different sets and all the different things that are asked of him, plus not being a great blocker, et cetera. We could talk about some of that stuff, but man, down the field, route running, after the catch, when he got opportunities, he usually made the most of them. And early in the year, he would have had a couple of 70, 80 yarders if Jordan hit him in stride. Those were a couple of the rare misses. Again, sort of a victim of circumstance to Matthew Golden. So for me, quite easily, the offensive, or not just offensive, but the rookie of the year overall for Green Bay was Matthew Golden. Most improved player is interesting. At the end of the day, so how I did this is I looked at all my grades from 2024 and then looked at all of them from 2025 and said who had the biggest increase in grade. And then later we're going to go through all of those as well, or at least the top five. Later we'll go through the bottom five as well, the biggest decrease. But the biggest increase from 2024 to 2025 wasn't close, and it was Jordan Love. Now, do I think Jordan was actually that much improved? Probably not. I think he did things that were improved, especially from a turnover ratio and things like that this year that were better. I just think last year he was hurt and missed a bunch, or not a bunch, but missed time. And I think when you look at his overall grade, it was only like a plus seven last year because you could tell he wasn't quite himself. And a lot of those turnovers in the first half of the year really killed his overall grade. And this year, he just had a much better level of consistency throughout the course of the year, played some really great football, and really stayed steady outside of maybe a game here or there, and then, of course, missing a couple games towards the end as well. But I thought this was a phenomenal year from Jordan. I thought it was a jump, specifically from last year because of the injuries. But overall, he had the biggest increase in grade from 2024 to 2025. Largest decline was Carrington Valentine. Carrington Valentine had a slight positive grade in 2024. And really, before the Philly game where he got just stiff-armed into the dirt in Philly by Dallas Goedert, I thought he was having a really nice season in 2024 and graded in the positive. Had it not been for the last game, he would have even been more in the positive. And it looked like Green Bay had found themselves a really nice corner. Then even early on this year, it looked like Carrington was playing some good football again. And then it just fell apart on him. The tackling went, the coverage went. I don't know if he lost confidence, but he was really bad at the end of the year and actually ended up as my lowest graded player on defense for Green Bay, which I would not have expected. I did not see coming. And that's a pretty big difference going from a plus player last year to a like my worst graded player on defense this year. That's a big step down for that reason. Carrington Valentine, my largest decline in 2025. All right, my top five highest graded offensive players in total grade. Number one, we went over Jordan Love. Number two, we went over Josh Jacobs. Number three and four, we touched base on briefly, just that they would have been in the conversation for offensive player of the year if they were healthy. Number three was Tucker Kraft, and number four is Christian Watson. And that's pretty remarkable when you consider that they garnered so much of a high grade in such little playing time with their injuries that they were still this high on the list. And again, I think had they stayed or had they been healthy all year, I think you would have saw Jordan Love as number one and then Kraft is two, Watson is three, probably more of Josh Jacobs as number four at that point. But I don't need to tell you that Tucker Kraft, when he was in there, was a massive difference maker and is deserving of an extremely high grade based on how he played when he was healthy this year. And the same goes for Christian Watson in the second half of the year. And it was almost like you took one and replaced it with the other. It's like, all right, first half of the year, Tucker's going to do all the playmaking. Tucker goes down injured. You get back Watson. And the second half of the year, Watson's going to do all the playmaking. And thankfully, you had that balance, or at least one of them there at all times. But it was really disappointing to never be able to see them play together. And hopefully next year, we get to see a lot more of that. But both of them were phenomenal. And had they been healthy, would have probably even been higher on this list. Number five, Malik Willis. Man, Malik just plays really good football for Green Bay anytime he's asked. It's remarkable what Malik Willis was able to do. And he deserves so much credit for just coming in, backup quarterback, and just dealing and being really incredible. It deserved to win that Ravens game based on how he played. He tried carrying the team that day, just about did it if the defense would have done anything. And, you know, then unfortunately he gets a little bit injured and banged up at the end of that one as well. But man, the running ability, the everything, every time he was asked to throw the ball, he threw with timing and accuracy, some deep balls down the field. He was just really, really impressive and came up with the fifth highest graded grade on offense, despite only playing a few games. Just a testament to him, his readiness, his preparedness, his ability to step in without any, sort of any issue or any lack of confidence. really, really impressive stuff. And he's going to go get a big contract in the offseason, and deservedly so for what he's done in Green Bay these last 2 years. We're going to miss him here for sure. Highest graded defensive players. Number one, Micah Parsons. We talked about that. Number two, I've talked about him as my favorite player to watch this year, is Evan Williams. Listen, guess what? This is going to be maybe controversial. I had and it's by like 0.05 points, but I had a higher grade on Evan Williams this year than I did on Xavier McKinney last year, just to give you an idea of how much I loved Evan Williams this year. I thought he was tremendous. I thought his ability to come up and play the run game and be physical, aggressive, attacking, while playing good sound defense and pass coverage as well. He was all over the place. Nobody flew to the football like Evan Williams did. There was the talking point that we had all year long of just like, go and put on the tape in any given game on defense and see how many plays that Evan Williams is within like a yard of, or making the play, or right there at the end of the play. It's crazy. It's crazy how involved he was. He was awesome this year, all pro level to me. That's how good. And he's only going to continue to get better, and should even have hopefully a few more eyes on him and more recognition in 2026. Number three and four are two players that I've seen people be a little bit more low on. And PFF and I both were like, no, no, no. They were both great. I know they didn't make the splash plays that you wanted them to, or that we saw maybe in 2024. But number three, Edgerrin Cooper. Number four, Xavier McKinney. Were both really, really good. Did X hold on to the interceptions this year? He didn't. Do I wish he would have? Yes. But he was assignment sure. He was sound. There were so many deep plays that were taken away because of how Xavier McKinney played on the back end. I know we don't get to see that on the TV copy during the game of what Xavier McKinney's doing a lot of times on the back end. And he was awesome, taking great angles to the football, being the last line of defense, making sure that players think it by him. He just played a great brand of football all season long. Really appreciated all of his efforts. And then Edgerrin Cooper didn't make quite as many big splashy plays, but played so much better overall defense down in and down out. More assignment sure, more attacking, more physical, more aggressive, and a lot of tackles, some tackles for loss. I know it wasn't, again, quite the sacks and big turnovers and things like that, but he still had a massive impact, and for me was the third highest graded player on defense. Again, X was fourth, and then Javon Bullard was fifth. I thought he made such a step as the nickel corner. You know, he really transitioned from safety to corner, played some safety from time to time. Another player that flies to the football. Nobody attacked those quick wide receiver screens better than Javon Bullard. He was outstanding at it. He played tough. He played strong. He played fast. He played physical. I love his brand of football overall. Still some things in coverage that he could clean up, but I did think he took a jump and really got better at it this year, especially playing in the slot, which was really tough for him in 24. 25, he improved it, really became a well-rounded overall player. Can't wait to see what 2026 brings for Javon Bullard. All right, my top graded players by position: quarterback was Jordan Love, running back was Josh Jacobs, wide receiver Christian Watson, tight end Tucker Kraft, offensive lineman was Zach Tom, defensive lineman was Devontae Wyatt, defensive end or edge rusher was Micah Parsons, linebacker was Edgerrin Cooper. I'm cheating a little bit and putting Javon Bullard at corner, because technically he was a slot corner the majority of the year, and all the other corners graded poorly basically. So I'm cheating and putting Javon Bullard there. And then safety was Evan Williams. So Love, Jacobs, Watson, Kraft, Tom, Wyatt, Parsons, Cooper, Bullard, and Williams were my highest graded players per position. Lowest graded offensive players: Rashid Walker was my lowest. What a massively disappointing year for Rashid Walker. Just had to go out and play solid sound football in a contract year and was going to get mega paid. He probably still gets mega paid, by the way, because bad offensive tackles still get mega paid, but he would have got more. Maybe he would have even gotten in Green Bay if he had a really good season. But instead, my lowest graded offensive player, felt like he was sabotaging the Packers in the wild card game time after time. Probably the worst game I've ever seen him play. And just a really poor brand of football from Rashid all season long, in pass pro, in run blocking, especially in run blocking. It was just ugly. It was really disappointing. And a player that I have really enjoyed in his time in Green Bay up until this season, and was pretty high on and thought he'd have a great season, and he just really did not. Number two is one that PFF and I disagreed on pretty vehemently. They had a sound, solid, good grade on Darian Kennard. He was my second lowest player. I actually started souring on the extra offensive lineman, six O-lineman sets, just because he was crappy at it. He didn't do a good job at it. And it wasn't really paying off the way that you wanted. Some of the plays worked still, But it wasn't because Darren Kennard was going out there and doing anything with that sixth offensive line spot. And then when he filled in that tackle, I thought it was really to the detriment too, and they had to help him a ton. And even then it didn't always work. So I think they're going to have to look at if they want to bring him back on that restricted free agent tender. And hopefully the offensive line can just stay healthier depending on who they ultimately have as their top 5-6 guys this year. And you don't have to count on Darren Kennard as much as you did in 2025. Jordan Morgan was my next lowest, although I do want to shout out and say, I do think he was better at the end of the year at tackle. I don't grade by position or, you know, anything like that. I just don't have the time to do it. I don't, you know, grade it based on run or pass defense or run or pass offense. It's graded. How did you grade on the play? It's as simple as it is. And I do think in his last few games when he was at tackle, left tackle and right tackle, especially right tackle, he played really well and showed real signs of improvement, real signs of growth, and real signs that he can be a starting NFL offensive tackle. So hopefully that's a sign of things to come. But early in the year at guard, he really struggled, and that's where the biggest negative came in. So again, he was my third lowest. Anthony Belton, fourth lowest. You might notice offensive line here. Yes, offensive line can get a little bit more dinged because they have more opportunity to kind of fail at times. But I've had Corey Linsley and David Bakhtiari, amongst others, as some of my highest graded offensive players that I've ever graded. So it's not like you don't have possibilities and options to grade well as an offensive lineman. And Zach Tom graded positive this year as well. So you're not required to be in the negative. You can easily grade in the positive on offensive line too. But Anthony Belton, I just thought was rookie, you know, showing signs of growth, but it was a work in progress. I thought he played some better ball towards the end of the year, although the wild card game was not great for him. But hopefully some signs of things to come, but he can improve and get better and be a real legitimate good starter for Green Bay this upcoming season. And then last but not least, Luke Musgrave was my fifth lowest on offense. Did some okay things at the end of the year from a receiving standpoint. His blocking was pretty atrocious, especially at the end of the year. He made a couple of big grabs, but also just couldn't get anything going after the catch. It just wasn't good enough as an overall tight end, but he did have some good catches towards the end of the year when filling in for Tucker Kraft. Lowest graded defensive players, we talked about Carrington is my lowest graded player. Keyshawn Nixon, my second lowest. Not exactly what you want to see. You're starting two corners as your two lowest graded players on defense. That's usually not a great sign. And that's exactly what it was for Green Bay. Nixon with the, you know, some of the bad tackling at the end of the year. He got beat in man. He got beat in zone. I know he had the big interception against Chicago. There were games where Keyshawn looked good. And at times, I don't know if I want to go as far as really good, but close to really good. Really good at Jace. And it was exciting to see that. But there was too many games where he wasn't. And just the lack of consistency, the lack of effort at times, especially in that wild card game, just disheartening. And, you know, Keyshawn was one of those guys you didn't want to bet against, but that was a tough scene. And again, Carrington and Keyshawn being the two lowest graded players on defense is not doing your defense any favors. Carl Brooks was next, negative 2.6, had a huge increase in snaps and playing time, got the opportunity, just really struggled against the run and was not able to make up for it ever really as a pass rusher. He kind of has that one move where he does the arm over and gets off the ball quick, and offenses are just on it now and they don't let him win with that. And he doesn't really have a counter or a second move. So if he can't win with that, he just kind of out of luck and he's not physical enough to hold up at the point of attack. And we saw that a huge chunk of this year. Warren Brinson was next as my fourth lowest graded defensive player. Some flashy signs from Brinson, but way, way, way too inconsistent. I do think he can be a player long-term, but you could tell work in progress, rookie moments, that face mask penalty, certainly one of them, just unlucky more than anything on that play. But run defense was the big culprit here. Pass defense, again, couple flashes here and there, but run defense is where he really struggled. Both Brooks and Brinson could get double teamed and moved off their spot far too easily. And you just got to get a lot better at that. And then Colby Wooden's a little bit of a hang with him. He also had to play a ton of snaps this year, you know, put on weight in the offseason. Goes from somebody who's playing, you know, 10 snaps a game to now playing at times like 50 snaps. And I thought he started the season great. You could just tell he wore out as the season went along, trying to be somebody that was playing that many snaps for 17 games. And he just ran out of gas and you could see it. He was grading positive through about midway through the year. And then it just kind of kept declining. And I think if they had a little bit better depth there, and if Wooden was like your third or fourth defensive tackle, you'd feel awesome about it. As your number one, you feel less great about it. And again, not only do you not want to see two corners, you don't want to see three interior defensive linemen on your lowest graded players. And that's exactly what happened for Green Bay. We'll be right back. Highest graded individual games on offense. Jordan Love was my highest in week 13. Malik Willis was my second highest in week 17. Then Jordan Love in week 11, Jordan Love in the wild card game, and Jordan Love in week 7. So the quarterbacks ruled on highest individual games, with Jordan having four of them and Malik Willis having one against the Ravens. My highest graded individual games on defense. I'm going to see, this is a tough one. I'm going to see if you can figure out a pattern here. Number one, Micah Parsons, week 6. Number 2, Micah Parsons, week 13. Number 3, Micah Parsons, week 4. Number 4, Micah Parsons, week 2. Number 5, Micah Parsons, week 15. The best 5 graded games of the year on defense were by Micah freaking Parsons. Again, going back to most important defensive player, defensive MVP for Green Bay, it was Micah. No questions asked. That week 6 game was by far and away the best of his and was just dominant in that game. And but he was phenomenal all season long, and the top 5 defensive grades were all Micah Parsons. Lowest graded individual games, Rashid Walker in the wild card game on offense was my lowest graded offensive game. Jordan Morgan in week 3 against Cleveland, Darian Kennard in week 4, Elton Jenkins in week 3 against Cleveland, and then Josh Jacobs in week 16. Those were my lowest graded individual games on offense. Lowest graded individual games on defense, Keyshawn Nixon in week 16, Carrington Valentine in week 17, Carrington Valentine in the wild card game, Carrington Valentine in week 4, and Jalen Simpson in that crappy, stupid exhibition, basically game against Minnesota in week 18. Highest graded offensive players per snap. All right, so my grades are usually based on total impact, but I wanted to break them down on a per snap basis. And here's what it came out to. And this is where I talked about maybe it would be Watson or Kraft. Well, here we go. Jordan Love was my highest graded offensive player on a per snap basis. This is a minimum of 150 snaps, by the way. If it wasn't, Malik Willis would have been insane on this. But minimum 150 snaps. Jordan Love was number 1. Tucker Kraft was number 2. So if you would have played out the season, probably would have been my offensive player of the year, not named Jordan Love. Josh Jacobs was number 3. Number 5 was Christian Watson. And my biggest surprise of anything while I was doing this and putting together my final grades, the number 4 person on this list, you want to guess who it was? It was Chris Brooks. Chris Brooks is my 4th highest graded offensive player on a per play basis. Now, a couple things. Chris Brooks graded incredibly well over and over and over again as a pass protecting back. He also graded well in run blocking in some of those situations where they would use him as a run blocker in their 2 running back formations. He would get a lot of checkdowns, or not a lot, but he would get some checkdowns and he would catch those. And he had a few runs too that were good looking runs. Because a lot of times it's kind of catching you by surprise, right? It's like a shotgun run that maybe you weren't expecting. There weren't many plays where Chris Brooks graded in the negative. And it was a pretty small sample size overall. He didn't play a ton. But when you have a lot of good tape and pass pro and run blocking and a couple good runs and some good catches out of the backfield, it's just a lot of positives and not a lot of negatives. And for that reason, he had a good solid grade, not a ton of snaps. And when you averaged it out, actually ended up being my 4th highest graded offensive player on a per snap basis. So good for Chris Brooks. Highest graded defensive player on a per snap basis, as you could imagine, Micah Parsons was number 1. Evan Williams was 2. Edgerrin Cooper was 3. Devontae Wyatt bumps up to 4, and Javon Bullard was at number 5. Lowest graded offensive players on a per snap basis, again, minimum 150 snaps. Darian Kennard was my lowest, followed by Rashid Walker, Anthony Belton, Malik Heath, and Jordan Morgan. Lowest graded defensive players per snap, Warren Brinson, Nasir Stackhouse, Carrington Valentine, Carl Brooks, and Nate Hobbs actually got in that conversation. So another corner got in that conversation for lowest graded player, this time on a per play basis. My highest graded games, weeks on offense, week 7 against the Cardinals was my highest graded offensive game for Green Bay, followed by week 13 against the Lions and week 14 against the Bears. Highest graded games on defense, week 6 against the Bengals, week 1 against the Lions, and week 12 against the Vikings. My lowest graded games on offense, as you could imagine, week 3 against the Browns, week 9 against the Panthers, and week 8 against the Steelers. And my lowest graded games in total defense, wild card against the Bears, week 17 against the Ravens, week 16 against the Bears, three of my lowest graded games on defense, all post Micah Parsons injury. My total grade on offense for the year in 2024 was a plus 35.3. Again, you don't have to know what the numbers mean. It's a good solid overall grade for the offense. Defense was a plus 11.8. Most games graded in the positive, so 17 game season, right? Playoff game is 18. The player who had the most games graded in the positive on either side of the ball was Evan Williams. Despite missing a couple games, or at least one game, he had 15 games graded in the positive. Jordan Love and Josh Jacobs had 14. Edgerrin Cooper had 13. Chris Brooks and Micah Parsons had 12. Dobbs had 11. Wicks, McDuffie, Bullard, and McKinney all had 10. Most games graded in the negative. The biggest loser was Rashid Walker, had 12 games graded in the negative. Darian Kennard and Colby Wooden had 11. Carl Brooks, Warren Brinson, and Jordan Morgan had 10. Most improved players from 24 to 25, minimum 150 snaps in both seasons. We talked about earlier, Jordan Love, biggest increase, huge increase from 2024 to 2025. Evan Williams was number two. Quay Walker was number three. Javon Bullard was number four. And Kingsley Enagbare was number five. My biggest decline from 2024 to 2025 was Jaden Reed, in large part due to missing so many snaps, right? If he would have played more, probably wouldn't have been as bad, but that was the biggest decline, followed by Josh Jacobs. Again, I think a huge opportunity here with just not having quite as much with the offensive line that they had. And again, I don't think Josh, to be totally fair, despite him, I think, playing well this year, I don't think he played quite as well as he did last year. I do think his injuries played a part in that. Carrington Valentine, we talked about. Elgton Jenkins was a huge step down and a massive disappointment, expected to still be a really good offensive player, and he just wasn't. And then Rashid Walker, again, huge decline. We talked about him already. Grades by position. So total grades by position. Quarterback, plus 23.2. Running back, plus 12.85. Receiver, plus 9.95. Tight end, plus 2.90. Offensive line, negative 13.6. Offensive line, by far and away, the biggest issue on offense. Defensively, edge rusher, plus 12.50. Safety, plus 11.60. Linebacker, plus 6.5. Interior defensive line, minus 8. Corner, minus 10.8. Checks out, right? The three biggest needs for Green Bay, the three biggest issues: offensive line, interior defensive line, corner. Those are your biggest three. 2025 draft class had a total grade of negative 2.25. Matthew Golden plus 3.45. Anthony Belton minus 2.75. Savion Williams minus 0.05. Baron Sorrell minus 0.35. Colin Oliver was even. Warren Brinson was negative 2.55. Micah Robinson's a Titan, did never played for Green Bay, and John Williams did not play this year. Total grade negative 2.25 for your 2025 rookie draft class. 2025 offseason additions. Aaron Banks was a negative 0.05. Darian Kennard was a negative 4.35. Nate Hobbs was a negative 1.35. Micah Parsons was plus 12.85. Total offseason additions, plus 7.10, with Micah doing a ton of heavy lifting there. Your 2026 unrestricted free agent grades: Rashid Walker, negative 5.25. Kingsley Enagbare, negative 0.85. Romeo Dobbs, plus 2.35. Nick Neiman, negative 0.2. Sean Ryan, plus 1.3. Malik Willis, plus 3.7. John Fitzpatrick, negative 0.1. And Quay Walker, plus 0.1. A total grade of plus 1.05. So you could lose a little bit there. But even if everyone left, it's not a huge loss overall. And if you could find a way to keep maybe like a Sean Ryan, you know, could keep, you know, plus 1.3 of that. But you're going to lose, you know, you're going to lose Malik Willis. You're probably going to lose Romeo Dobbs. But Rashid Walker, bad grade this year. And if Jordan Morgan can replace him and play better, maybe you can get some addition by subtraction there. The full grades, everything you need to know, every category, every grade for the season, every player, over on PackerReport.com. You can check them all out over there. Thank you for joining my grading the pack articles and the grades videos that I did all season long. Again, it is a labor of love. It is intense. It takes so much freaking time. And again, it's never meant to be perfect. If you want to disagree with things, you are more than your right to do so. But that's what my eyes saw and charted all throughout the year. It's like I said, it takes a ton of time. I enjoy doing it, but it is a grind. And this is the results of all of those efforts. A couple other quick things. I've got Patriots over Broncos. I do think Stidham's going to play well, better than at least people think in this game. And I think Denver's going to have a real chance to win. But I just think the difference between Stidham and Drake May is going to be enough to get New England over the edge. And then I think the Seahawks are really going to take care of the Rams. I really do. I don't think the Rams are playing great football, and I don't think they're going to be able to go into Seattle and pick up that win. I think Seattle actually wins relatively easily. So I'm going Patriots and Seahawks. And if you actually told me one of those teams got upset, I would say it's Seahawks and Broncos that are going to face in the Super Bowl. But I'm officially going Seahawks, Patriots, and I think that'd be a really good game. Don't really have a horse in the race for any of these four teams. Would love to see Devontae Adams get a ring. That'd be fun. But outside of that, not really pulling for anything one way or the other, other than really good football. Hopefully we get some really good games. I will be live at halftime on the Luigi's Pizza Twitter account, so you can check that out, at Luigi's Pizza. Looking forward to going over the game and just answering any questions that you guys have. So again, follow them, and I will see you guys at halftime there. I'm going to be live for the members Q&A on Monday, and then happy hour on Friday. And of course, we'll have great episodes lined up for you all week long. I have a feeling I'm going to need this week. So if you'd be ever so kind as to go on your, if you're listening to an audio podcast, and just giving those 5-star reviews, it'd be very, very appreciated. Just have a feeling we might get some 0 and 1-star reviews this week. So appreciate you guys a ton for doing that in advance. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Huang, Peter Itaka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Chris Reger, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkelstinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weiss, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hader Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhardt, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, Nemo, Donald Decker, and Damon Hartley. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.